This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. While we've all learned and mostly remembered to wash or sanitize our hands after we touch surfaces, the ongoing pandemic has undoubtedly made a lot of people antsy about touching any surfaces unless they really, really need to. Self-service screens are one of those surfaces that makes at least some people jumpy, and things like voice-based ordering or throwing screen controls to the customer's smartphone have come up as alternatives in recent months. Now, a German company that mainly does eye tracking for workplace environments is touting a solution that would enable ordering a burger at a restaurant chain to be contactless. A built-in sensor on the kiosk would track and respond to what a customer sees on the screen, all the way from a welcome message and through to order confirmation. This is not stuff out of a sci-fi movie, but a riff on existing technology that takes endless mouse work out of repetitive office jobs and allows workers with greasy or occupied hands to navigate and update a screen just by looking at it. Stefan Odorfer, one of the founders at 42, walked me through the thinking and how it all works. All right, Stefan, can you give me a rundown on what your company is all about and what your technology does broadly?
Sure. So at 42, what we're doing is all about natural interaction. Natural interaction using your gaze, first of all, but in some use cases also combining speech and gestures. So basically, they build in, I would say, natural use topics that the human can do. So what we're mainly doing nowadays is we're controlling standard workplaces, in from accounting to support centers to engineering, and largely replacing the 50-year-old mouse. So that means that you can, while you're having your hands on the keyboard, you start typing, and when you want to select a different input field, for example, in your SAP environment, you just look at this input field, which you're doing anyway, and you continue typing because our software understands that what you want to do and basically predicts the intention and proactively helps you in your daily tasks. So this is what we are usually doing in for several years now. What we have been doing lately is for hands-free, or completely touchless interaction in kiosk situations or in dedicated restaurant situations, where you use your gaze as you do today. You browse through the menu. You automatically scroll a list while you're reading it. And our system understands that you're currently in the reading mode. And obviously, what you want to do at the end of a page, you want to continue scrolling it. So the system automatically scrolls within your speed, your reading speed. And what it also does is, obviously, if you want to select, say, you want to select a salad or this burger, so you just look at this icons. And then we developed a special way to basically trigger these elements, because it's not about just looking in them and boom, it happens. That's not good. So it's rather a way to basically first select something and then trigger something just with your gaze. So this is, in a nutshell, what we're doing.
The restaurant applications for self-service ordering and so on, was that something that was already an ask, a request from operators prior to COVID, or is it because of the pandemic that this is now something that's being, you know, put together?
Mm-hmm. So it was clearly connected with the pandemic, the topic of, say, well, that people being afraid of touching surfaces, or the need in restaurants to continuously make sure that these surfaces are clean. We have seen this in manufacturing environments. We have seen this for a longer time already. So we're having productive solutions of people on the shop floor having gloves, etc. and they are controlling their shop floor terminals just with their gaze, so that they can continue doing with their hands what their actual job is. Now, going into the restaurant business, it's quite similar because I mean it's a clear interface. You have a bunch of options that you can today touch or click on, and now basically look at, and it's not a complex interface. So what people are doing there usually is pretty similar. And due to the COVID-19 situation, people were looking at, well, solutions for not having to touch things on the one hand, and what we could offer with this technology is not only replacing this need to touch something, but it's also using our gaze technology. We see what people are interested in. And based on this information, we can predict what the user wants to have, in this case, for example, what he's looking for, and can then, in this case, can propose recommendations for based on his current view, his current gaze history, not based on the history of other people, but on his very history. And therefore, we can not only make his experience more personal, more individual, but also create a potential for upselling and for cross-selling from the store owner.
So you're using machine learning or some kind of computer vision to do that?
Yes. So it's local-based technology because privacy is an important topic for us. So it's not being transmitted in the cloud. Everything that we do here in this personalization runs on the system, in a local system. And what it basically does, it understands where you're looking at and where you're not looking at, which is very important. So this is an area where we have already filed several patents, because the main one of the most important things is obviously at what you look and how you look at these things. But what is also very interesting is what you're not looking at, because in your peripheral view, our autopilot works. So our autopilot in our brain basically is, if I say 2 plus 2, in our brains it just makes 4. So, but if I say like 42 times 17, there are not that many brains where the solution pops up. So we need to focus on that and do the math. But the automatic part in our brain, that is basically getting selecting what should be put in our focus. So in this area, when I'm scrolling, for example, let's say I'm scrolling through a menu in a restaurant, and this has different pizzas, for example. What I'm doing is I'm basically quickly running through a page and I'm scanning things, like we do if we do a Google search, for example. Mm. Nobody's reading each word. We are scanning, and if it makes sense, if our autopilot says, hey, this could be an interesting result, then we put our focus on it, and then we read it, and then we decide. And we basically understand what you already get rid of in your autopilot, because this is very important to create a better funnel and to create better search results in less time.
Okay. So when the original, maybe not the original, but the most familiar gesture sensors out there, the Kinect sensors that came out maybe 10 years ago, there were attempts at that time to use gesture as an interactive interface for screens. And the objection I always had and observed was that there was a big learning curve for people to figure out how to use this. And I would imagine in something like a restaurant environment, where a lot of the goal is to speed up transactions, speed up decision making and everything else, how do you get past something where you're walking up to a screen for the first time and it's an unfamiliar interface?
That's a very important question. You're absolutely right. And the older folks out there probably remember the Minority Report scene with Tom Cruise,
right?
Where he's doing all these fancy moves and controls the computer with that. Well, think of this: you would do this next to the learning curve you were mentioning. It's also a topic of how long do you want to do this until this is more a sports event than a operation of a screen, right? So. Mm-hmm. your eyes are constantly moving anyway. So your eyes are, before you touch something, before you put a gesture at just pointing at something or click a mouse or whatever, your eyes are always already at this point that you want to address. And that's the magic of eye tracking. So the question is, how do we make sure that there's in our standard environment, a steep learning curve that people get familiar very fast with this technology. And on the other hand, in a kiosk mode, people get, it's a robust environment. It's a robust operation. It's a completely 100% sure operation in terms of that the user knows what's going to happen and what to expect, etc. Because this is necessary that people will accept it. And what we came up with here is a way to confirm things and read things from basically his gaze information so that we can predict what he wants to do. And why we have done this, because this is something that we are focusing on. So the company itself is 7 years old, but my partner and myself, founding partners, we are focusing on this technology now for almost 10 years. And we came up with, if I remember the first days and the first month and years, it looked pretty different in terms of how we control computers touchless today. So let me do an example. If you look at things at a button, for example, what it usually does today, it's at different other interfaces, it is a so-called dwell time. Dwell time means you look at a button and the button basically triggers within a specific time of, say, 2 seconds or whatever, right? So as always, it's taking too long for a nice interaction, and it's too short and therefore too many false positives if you speed it up, right? So What we came up with is basically a way that you select within a split second, you select something. You can basically think of in a Windows environment, you can select on the desktop. If you click an icon, if you click it once, you select it. If you click it twice, the double click, then you trigger it. But you can also click it once, select it, and then press return. That's basically the same. So you select it, and then you trigger it. And that's the same what we are doing. So you look at a burger, and you select this, right? If you wanna trigger this and put this in a cart, for example, then every time you selected something, a button pops up that basically triggers the selection and to put it into the cart or whatever happens forced by this button. So it's always a two-step system, and that's robust enough. But if you know how to deal with the system, you can do it super fast because our eyes are controlled by the fastest muscles in our body. So it's no matter if you're looking from the lower left part to the upper right part, you can do this in a split second, while if you would need to move your hand, that would take much, much longer.
And if you want to select something, are you blinking or doing something like that to kind of confirm?
This would be a possibility to blink, but it's blinking I recall the automatic, the autopilot in our brain, right? Mm-hmm. And blinking is also controlled by the autopilot in our brain. So nobody is actively blinking except for these specific situations where you blink with one eye to show somebody that we all know the situation if you close one eye and blink to somebody, right? So that's a specific action. But if you would need to blink to every time, that feels awkward. Mm-hmm. It is possible to control interfaces with blinking, and eye tracking is something that is here for many, many years, for decades in time. And where it came from is from psychological studies, from marketing studies. You know, we all know these heat maps for search results, etc. And where it also came from is that it's possible for impaired people to control a computer. So that's the great way. And the only way for many people to be part in this world, right? That is the internet and communication, etc. So, and if they can only use their eyes as their eye muscles, because everything else is not possible anymore, then this is a great way. But if it's for, but there are other ways, better ways to to trigger things. Yeah, and this is not blinking. Another opportunity would be come up maybe in your mind would be nodding, right? But anything of these blinking and nodding has too many false positives.
Right.
So that's why we came up with this other solution.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So walk me through this. If there's a hamburger chain and you have a self-service ordering kiosk and you're using your technology, I walk up to this thing and what is it telling me right away that you can like, is there a message that says you can navigate this whole thing just using your gaze?
Yes, it is. Right. So it would not be that it's only possible by gaze, right? So you should always have a fallback option. In this case, this would be touch, right? Because you don't want to force people in a direction. You want to offer them a better way. Or a different way in the first place, and after they experience it in a better way. So it would introduce this to folks. Hey, you can touch me, but you can also just look at me, and I will understand what you want to do. And based in this very first approach, so the system basically understands, hey, there's a new customer approaching me. So the system understands that somebody is looking at the system, and it can welcome the customer. Yeah, and based on this, basically, if it's a new customer and who is not familiar with this technology at all, then it's very simple. Either he can take a short tour in this situation, which is like a matter of what I would say something like 5 seconds, 10 seconds, basically just to understand what it is, and I see great potential in terms of viral marketing here, because just think about somebody is controlling the device just with his gaze, and somebody his buddy is filming this and putting this on YouTube. How innovative this solution is, basically, right? So he understands. Okay, this is how I can do it. And then, for example, if he goes through the list of burgers in this case, he doesn't need to learn anything. The system understands that this guy is reading, and it scrolls automatically the list. As if by magic. So there's no need to understand something. The only thing you need to understand is basically that you look at a button and you see a little shine around this burger, for example. So that must integrate into the user interface and the corporate identity of the brand, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it gives a little shine, so that means it's selected. And then this button pops up, and at the first time of a new user, this button pops up. Obviously, the user will look at this button, right? So that's the way we say, okay, hey, next time you're gonna look at this button, you're gonna select this burger to put in the cart. Understood? And then you just look at the button. Yes, I understood. And then you're good to go because you don't need to learn anything else. You just know, okay, it's system that scrolls automatic for me. I understood this because I experienced life in my. In the list, and if I'm looking at a button, okay, this other button pops up, and once I'm looking at this button, I trigger it. If I'm not looking at this button, it's vanishing right away after a split second.
Okay, so if I decide I want the cheeseburger with bacon, the prompt will come up, and if I look at it, it will confirm that I want that and put it into my quote unquote shopping cart.
For example, this way, then we have different other buttons in such an interface. For example, the amount. So I want to have like two burgers or three burgers. What is the difference in if you use gaze control instead of touch control or something? Nowadays, our eyes are sensors. They sense information and put this into our brain. What we're doing is not only sensing, we are making these our eyes also to actors. So they are acting actively. Yeah? So, for example, if you think about you're driving in a car And you have both your hands at the steering wheel. And so you, for example, you want to change the radio station. So if you're familiar with the car, you know exactly without leaving your without having your eyes looking at the cockpit, the mm-hmm. center cockpit, you know where you need to put your hands to turn up the volume or to change the station, right? Because, well, you just know it where your hands need to go. But if you need to look at this element, for example, you say plus, 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 you would need to create the information within your peripheral view. If you look mm-hmm. at plus, you need to create the number that you're currently at right next to the interface, right? Because you mm-hmm. need to understand that you're at 3 and now stop looking at plus, right? Because it counts up. So this is basically, or you just look at if you say, how many burgers do you want of these? Then you just look at out of five buttons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because the restaurants know what amount of burgers or salads or whatever people are usually using, right? So you don't need to choose 28 salads or something. That's what I mean.
Right. So you go through that whole ordering process, and then you would use more conventional payment systems like credit cards or maybe even a phone scanner, NFC tap or something like that. Is there a point, because you're already using a camera and you're looking at the retina or the iris of a viewer, could you do payment off of the biometrics of that person's unique eye characteristics?
Well, it is possible, right? Mm-hmm. It's theoretical possible. And if you look, for example, to many Asian countries,
yes,
it's already, that's standard, right? It's not something sophisticated. That's already something that they do on a daily basis.
But so, they don't have GDPR there.
They don't have GDPR, true, absolutely true. And that's exactly why I said it's theoretically possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So biometrical identification, so for example, this eye tracker that we are using also can be used to log into your Windows system using the Windows Hello technology. And what it basically does, it's not sending, it's basically the same if you use your iPhone or your Android phone, that you use the same infrared-based camera technology to identify that it's you. But it's only asking, is it you or not? So you don't need to have the connection to a database. Yeah? That's mm-hmm. the main difference here. So there, as I said, it's theoretically possible, but this is not, that's neither a focus of ours, nor right. it is something that is necessary in this case, because what you can actually do is, well, use a QR code to pay. That's one thing. Use a touchless credit card or debit card to pay. So there are many ways of contactless paying in a way. What it furthermore does, and I pointed this out a little bit earlier already. So while you are browsing this and looking through the menu, basically, yeah. So what we understand is, what do you trigger for? So what are you interested in? Because we know that such an eye tracker collects data with about 90 hertz, so 90 times a second, we understand where you're looking at. And this information can be used to basically understand, using this autopilot information, what you're interested in and whatnot. So in this case, for example, we can say right at before the checkout, we can say, hey, because we understood you were thinking about taking this ice cream dessert, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why not offer it again at the checkout? But as we know what kind of ice cream you looked at and thought about, and based on this gaze pattern, we understand that you really thought about this. So it's not a historical information that people that used this burger also like this ice cream. No, it's personal. And therefore, you have a much better conversion rate of having upselling and mm-hmm. making the cart size larger.
So if I'm a kiosk manufacturer and this intrigues me, I have QSR or other retail clients who might be interested in this, what are the hardware implications for this? Do you need to add a separate PC that just does that processing? Is there a separate specific camera that you need? Those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. So there's a basically an eye tracker consists of three different parts. And that is one thing is the infrared lighting. So that's LEDs, like you like you also have on your in your iPhone, Android phone today. You have a camera solution that is basically the same here. There's a special infrared camera. And you have a so-called ASIC. So it's a dedicated chip on board on the eye track itself that does all the math. Because through the USB port that is connected, only coordinates, XY coordinates and XYZ coordinates of your eyes are transmitted. So there's no camera image transmitted or saved at all. Everything is calculated in memory and just not saved at all, right? So also in terms of privacy. So this is a standard equipment that can be easily built into the hinge of a notebook. So it's really small. So the area you need, the volume you need to put this into your existing kiosk solutions is really tiny. And the only thing that is necessary, it needs to be put below the screen so that you can easily track the whole screen range with this.
Okay, so you don't need a separate PC with, you know, running an Intel i5 or that sort of thing to make all this happen. It can just happen off of a pretty simple hardware setup.
Well, you do. It depends on the use case that you want to do. For example, if you want to do the prediction, the intention prediction parts that I was referring to,
right?
Then this is something that is not produced on the eye tracker itself. That is something that runs in the software on the local hardware. And therefore, you should have an up-to-date device. This could be Intel processor, because Intel processors, they have, so we take advantage of Intel processors, for example, because they have a dedicated deep learning algorithms embedded that we can use. And therefore, it's there's much lower CPU consumption needed because it's already built in. So the commands are built into the hardware itself.
Okay, so if you had a touchscreen kiosk, you could have both functions, like the all the stuff that the touchscreen kiosk normally does could run on there, and your technology could run in parallel. You don't need two separate devices to do all that.
True.
As long as you've got enough hardware.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. There was a big fuss recently up here in Canada where I live about a shopping mall using cameras. And even though it was anonymous video analytics, it was misinterpreted and there was all kinds of upset about it, even though there was really no reason to be. There's nothing, no privacy invasion happening there. How do you get past that with customers who worry about it and with the general public? Because even though what you're saying is it's only the eye coordinates, people are going to see cameras and go, oh my God, my invasion or my privacy is being invaded here.
Absolutely important. Yeah. So first of all, it uses a camera, but it's a sensor. So that means that the camera images are not saved anywhere at all. Right. So that's the first thing. And in terms of the hardware, then in terms of our company, we are based in Munich in Germany, and Germany has a very, very strict privacy law. So even in specific areas, this is even going further than GDPR requests. Mm-hmm. And this, for us, this is also very, so for the company itself and for me and my partner Tori as founders, this is a very important topic, because we want to make our vision and our mission is to make computers understand us humans and not us humans to understand how a computer is operated, right? This has been for many, many years that we had to learn how things work. It's time that computers understand and predict how they can serve us, because that's their duty, nothing else. So in this way, we need to have a better understanding of how we can serve, and therefore we need data. If you don't have data, it's like if you want to learn swimming in a pool without water, it's not possible. So you need the data. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have here we have a certificates of German privacy. Well, that's nothing familiar outside of Germany probably, mm-hmm. but it's a DECRA, it's called. data audit, so which makes sure that we really how we handle data, how we process data, how we delete data, and how we anonymize and pseudonymize data and aggregate data. So to really make sure that we don't the data we use that nothing is basically can be transferred to any individual. That's very important because I don't want a big company that they understand what I'm interested in. So that's why we build our ways is more, it's like a similar to a Brewer Nash model in data privacy. So that's basically something is on the one side of the wall. So that's the local part. And then there's a part of the other side of the wall. And for example, to make this more plausible, think of it that you're searching a result and you need to have access data online because this is something that we also do. If you need to load more information, for example, they're doing an e-commerce search and you're loading more information, more t-shirts that you're looking for. So our way is that we ask for 100 new results and locally we only use 10 of them. So the guys providing the data, they only know they put 100 results to us, but they don't know which 10 of these hundreds we are using and we are needing. So that's basically how you kind of can get around that somebody else is building a model about the person that you are serving. So that's the one thing. And thinking about these kiosk solutions, well, all the data is on the device anyway. So and as nothing is transmitted to a server to do the local optimization or the local personalization, there's no problem in terms of the privacy. Furthermore, after the session is done and somebody else appears, then we start from scratch, basically, in terms of the data and personalization.
Okay. So last question, is this all what we've been talking about conceptual, or are you in the field with self-service kiosks that are doing all this?
So what we are doing, so for now 3-4 years, what we're doing is we're equipping large enterprises for their standard workplaces, right? So that's right. The efficiency and ergonomic benefits. What the same goes for shop floors. So we have productive environments running in hands-free, touchless interaction, but not collecting a burger, but just confirming a step in your assembly process, right, for example. So that's what we're doing. And through the pandemic, we have seen this request from kiosk hardware and software and solution providers on the one hand, but also from customers' side, so that they looking for other ways to solve their problems, basically. So this is something that we are, I'm pretty sure we're going to equip in a few weeks. We're going to equip, for example, a completely touchless kiosk system of a large company that offers their guests to, you know, understand more about the company and understand how to get around at the campus, for example, completely touchless with this. And that's pretty much the same because you have somebody approaching a terminal. The system says hello, welcomes you, and you use it for 1, 2, 3 minutes, and then you move on, right? So that's very similar. And so I'm looking forward to seeing this in kiosk environments too.
Right. So the interest is absolutely there, but we're still in fairly early stages of seeing this out in the marketplace.
Yes.
Okay. Very nice to speak with you. Thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.